You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.
Hare Krishna. Welcome everybody to Radio Mayapur podcast. This is Gangadas Yoros. We're talking from Sydney, Australia. Today is very beautiful days, 24 degrees.
Amazing
pleasant,
day.
Pleasant weather. I know in India it's very hot, 40, 41, 42 in Mayapur, and similar weather in Chennai. And so today we are very fortunate. We are doing a podcast of Anandamaya Gopinath Prabhu, who has been here in Australia for last how many years?
17 years.
17 years. He's born and grew up in Chennai. He's born in 1972. He studied engineering in Coimbatore, and he met the devotee in 2001. Now he has a big congregation, about 150 devotees, or Bhakti Vriksha, which is a program which assists the devotee in whatever sphere of life they are to be Krishna conscious, basically to put Krishna in the center of their life.
Yeah.
Don't change your job, don't shave up, don't give up your dress, do whatever you're doing, but just put Krishna in your life and then you become very happy and satisfied. Certainly. Am I correct?
Certainly.
Welcome to our podcast, Anandamaya Gopinath Prabhu. It's a pleasure to be with you. I come every year with His Holiness Banaswami, and you are hosting us in your house. I feel part of your family.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for allowing us to serve you.
No, it's wonderful to have many houses and many Vaishnava family all over the world which assist, and we try to inspire the devotee all over. And Banu Maharaj is a walking encyclopedia of Vedic knowledge, or a spiritual scientist. So I'm sure he's inspiring everybody. So Anandamaya Prabhu, tell us a little bit about what was your life before you met the devotees. Because you grew up in a cultured family in Chennai.
Yeah. So I would say that kind of a mix before Krishna consciousness, in the sense that I was growing up in a Smartha Brahmana family.
Okay.
Looking at, you know, mostly Mayavada philosophy and those kind of things, and, you know, every year going to the temple, and but I had no idea why we were doing some things. So even to the extent that one time when my family was trying to go to Tirupati, I was asking my parents, should I really need to come? Because, like, you know, I have to stand in the queue for like 5 hours. And
if you're lucky, sometimes
exactly. 20 hours. So, and then for what, you know, 2 seconds of seeing Darshan, like that.
The Lord.
So I was criticizing. And when I actually went to college, had influence with so many other friends who were more leaning towards the scientific things. And so
you were questioning everything.
Yeah. So basically going towards atheism, I would say that, you know, okay, I'll believe what I see. I don't believe in all these things. So,
right.
So I went to that extent. So that was kind of my life. And then after getting married, although I got introduced to Krishna consciousness, but then I was still stubborn, in the sense that I couldn't establish myself between this atheism and Smartha Brahmana. I wanted both of the worlds in a way. As a Smartha Brahmana, I was rigid in doing certain things that my family wanted me to do. But at the same time, I was not ready to do those things. I was expecting my wife to do that. So this is what a mixture of life that I was leading.
Would you say that this was due to the fact that you were not explained why you are doing this ritual? For what purpose?
Absolutely.
You're just a family tradition. Like,
correct.
We do this, this is what we do, and you do the same because you're born in this family.
Yeah.
And nobody really explained or say, okay, this is pleasing to God, or this is because of this.
Yeah.
There was no scientific explanation.
True. I mean, I wouldn't say my parents were really knowledgeable in the scriptures, So many times when I ask a question to them, they would say like, oh, this is what we have been following. Right. It's a tradition. So correct. They themselves were not able to give me a complete answer. So as a result, that's where my influence when I went to college started with my friends talking about scientific things. And, right. you know, I was part of the astronomy club in the college. And so, you know, getting into looking at planets and this thing and trying to read about Stephen Hawking and trying to understand Big Bang Theory and
right.
those kind of things. So that started
something
influencing.
Logic which explain how the creation happened.
Yeah.
Apart from fate.
Yeah.
Which was not explained to us very, in a very, you know, logical terms.
Logical way, yeah.
Yeah. I had a similar experience because I was growing up Catholic.
Mm.
So whenever I asked the priest, okay, he said, Jesus says, I am the son of God. So yeah. who is the father of Jesus?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't know, you know, and then you have to have faith. I said, I do have faith, but who is God? So there are many, many things they could not understand themselves and they could not explain. Because when I ask, okay, for example, okay, you can go to heaven or you go to hell, but your body dies, so who is going to hell? Who's going to heaven? How do you go? They don't explain about the soul.
Yeah.
And they don't explain about the spirit. And so there was a lot of confusion in my life as well.
Wow.
So that's a very important factor. So, but then what happened? You get married, and then?
So, when I got married,
One second, where you got married? Was this an arranged marriage?
Yes, it is an arranged marriage. Okay. So, by that time, I was in US in 1999, so I went to US and a couple of years as a bachelor, and then in 2001 I got married in Chennai.
I was working there in US. As what?
As in the networking and security field, so in the computer field basically.
IT,
yeah. So 2001 I got married in Chennai. And so when I first met my wife, she was saying, I don't take onion, garlic, and this thing. And I was like, oh, okay, what is this? Something new. And but then I said, like, okay, I will, you know, occasionally I have taken eggs and this thing. And so like that, I said, and she said, like, you know, can you give it up? I said, yeah, okay. So
not big deal.
No big deal. I'm not so fussed about it. So I was like that. And then, but then I was still taking onion, garlic outside when I go to the restaurants. So when I first met my wife, I still remember the day. It was Valentine's Day on 2001.
Which month of the year?
February 14th.
February, so it was cool, not so much.
Yeah, February 14th, 2001. So basically got married, met my wife and then got to know about this.
This was arranged by your parents.
It was arranged by the parents.
And the check was the astrology, everything.
Yes, yes.
So everything was matching. So
everything was matching.
You were convinced. But, or you were thinking, maybe work, maybe not. What was your mind?
So, the ISKCON factor was not a big thing at that point in time. Because it was only 2 years since my wife had been introduced to ISKCON.
Okay.
So, she was following ISKCON. She was chanting already. But she had not got initiated or, you know, that.
Okay.
So, but then they were attending Bhakti Vriksha in Chennai.
Okay.
And so she was learning quite a few things. I had no idea. She never spoke about it too much, other than the fact that
no onion garlic.
That's all she said.
She didn't want to shock you.
She didn't say too many things. So I
maybe
said,
she was scared you would get her.
Yeah. So she didn't really say anything for a very long time. So then after that, the usual stuff, like we got engaged the same month. So the parents agreed with each other. And so we got engaged and got married in November. Everything was fine. Nice. Still nothing major. The one thing that she kept doing without my knowledge was that is that, well, when we got married, somebody gave us Jagannath Baldev Subhadra.
Wow. Nice.
So they came into our lives. And so she brought them
home,
home to US with her. And as a result, you know, she was offering me prasadam without me knowing what I was actually consuming. Occasionally she will ask me, can you take me to the temple? So I'll take her to the temple.
Which city you were at that time?
At that time I was in San Diego.
Okay, San Diego Temple.
San Diego Temple.
Nice.
And in fact, this was also one of the things that happened before my marriage. So between the time of my engagement and marriage, I lost a job in US. And I was kind of in between. So I was trying to find another job, and then I got laid off, but then figured out what to do. But at that time, I was in Chicago. When I was engaged, I was in Chicago. But then I tried to find, luckily I found another job. But because I changed the job, I had to change my visa to that company as well. So I had to submit my passport to the government for visa processing. And I didn't get my passport to travel back to India in November. So 22nd was my marriage, and I got my passport on 19th
just
November. So I didn't know whether I was going to go for my own marriage. So somehow or other, some conversations happened. And so again, my wife tricked me to pray to Narasimhadev in Mayapur. So I was like, okay, you know, somehow I needed to get married. Yeah. So I said, like, okay, whoever you say, I will pray.
I'll do anything.
I'll pray to anybody. So then it's so, and then we pray. I prayed, and then I said, like, you know, after I get married, I'll come to Mayapur.
Sure.
So we got married, and then I came to Mayapur in 2001. So at that time, I had no idea what was happening, nothing.
What is this place?
Yeah, what is this place? And
coming from Kolkata, you see all rice fields.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you reach Mayapur, you say, whoa, what explosion of...
So there was nothing there. And, yeah. And in fact, while going back to the airport in Kolkata, our tire got punctured and it was raining. And I was like literally anxious. When are we going to catch the flight to go back? And so it was really, really tough. So, but anyway, so this is how my introduction to Krishna consciousness came
through your wife.
Through my wife. Nice. She tricked me in many things, as I would say, intelligently.
Yeah, she was scared that you would run away if she would have told you everything in the beginning.
Possible.
And you would have said, oh, forget it, I'm not going to marry, this is crazy. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But she was smart.
Yeah, she was very
intelligent.
Smart. She's still smart, I would say.
She's always, the women are always smarter than us, I would say that.
Yeah, yeah. So then, yeah, after that, so we got Jagannath Baldev Subhadra, and then she kept on feeding me prasadam every day. And occasionally she'll say, can we go to the temple in San Diego? And when I first went inside the San Diego temple, it was a culture shock because...
Was it like India?
Not like India. Like everybody was jumping and dancing because I'm used from coming from Smartha Brahmana.
Chanting mantra, like,
yeah, sit down and then, you know, do things. But then when I went inside the San Diego temple, everybody was jumping and dancing and in kirtan. And I was like,
and they're all foreigners.
They're all foreigners as well. I was like, what is the God here? So I used to always stand in the back. I would never come in the front. Yes. I still remember at that time, now His Holiness Badrinarayan Swami Maharaj.
Yes, yes.
So he was the temple president at that time.
Very sweet.
Yeah, very nice. I still remember one day, Sunday we went, and then he himself brought in the morning prasadam, and then he was serving us. Nice. I'm still grateful to him. I didn't know of his stature at that point in time, but I still regard him very high. Such a very nice, simple person.
Very nice person. Yeah. Very open mind. Very good in communication. Amazing personality. Very jolly, always making jokes.
True.
Making fun.
True. So we had a very, you know, full prasadam that day. So it was very nice. So like that, you know, that's how I got.
Slowly introduced. Maharaj, at the time it was not Maharaj. He spoke to you.
But yeah.
Then you ever got some book to read which impressed you or something? A small book or Bhagavad Gita or anything?
No. So it did happen one time that my in-laws came here. Mm-hmm. So my in-laws were also practicing Krishna consciousness.
Were they initiated or not?
They got initiated somewhere around 2004 or 2005.
Okay.
Somewhere around that time. They were not initiated when I got married. Okay. But I couldn't understand what was initiation, nothing.
Yes.
I was always like, you do your thing, I will do my thing.
I got a job to do, work, make money, whatever you want.
Diwali, we'll go to the temple, we will just do something and then we'll come back. Or, you know, some other main occasion, we'll just go to the temple and then come back. That's it. So this was going on, but then again, I was not too serious. I did not read any books, nothing. Slowly, around, I think, 2007 or so, after almost 6 years.
Of eating prasadam.
Of eating prasadam, yeah. My wife was saying, can you chant one round? You know, it's good. And so she was trying to make me. Yeah. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it for her sake. I'll do it, kind of.
What would you not do for meeting your wife, right? That's the art of marriage.
Yeah. So I said, like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And then at that time in 2007, we had moved to Sydney. So I would say that that is where, since then, or rather probably from 2006, again, my wife tricked me to come to Sydney.
How? Tell us.
How? Okay. So, she was actually looking for places where Guru Maharaj will visit.
Oh.
Because Guru Maharaj doesn't come to U.S. that often at that time. He used
Maharaj
to come to His Holiness
Japataka
Swami. So he will come to Atlanta, but we were staying in Austin, Texas. So he would not come to Texas. He would come only to Atlanta, and then he will go there, and then he will go back. Yeah. So there was no chance of us actually, you know, doing that. So, but then my idea was to be close to my parents because my parents were getting old, and if I had to stay in U.S., it would have probably taken another 10 years for me to actually bring my parents with me. And by that time, they would have already grown old too much. So then we started looking at where we can settle. So my options were Canada or Singapore. But then again, she was somehow managed to tell me that from a schooling point of view, Australia is better. So somehow she convinced me. And luckily, I have a cousin who lives in Sydney. Mm. So I was like, okay, at least some family is there. So I thought like, okay, and then her cousin is in Perth.
Ah.
So we had two options, either to go to Sydney or in Perth. So we said like, okay, we'll check it out. And so that's when I think things started changing for me. I could see a lot of things. I'm not able to explain why those things happened, but I could still see that, you know, Radha Gopinath, he had his hand in doing everything behind the scenes. I was really, now after coming to Krishna consciousness, I'm gobsmacked as to what the plans were for me.
1 minute, let's explain, who is Radha Gopinath?
Oh, yes. So, Sri Radha Gopinath is the deity here in ISKCON North Sydney Temple. They are actually brought by Srila Prabhupada himself from India. He installed them.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So first time actually Radha Gopinath actually came to Sydney. So the history goes like this. If you read Kurma Prabhu's greater transcendental adventure, he would have written about this, how Sri Sri Radha Gopinath came. Mm-hmm. So they came, and then the devotees were thinking, nobody told us that, you know, we will be getting some deity or something. So they did not accept it, and Radha Gopinath actually went back to Malaysia. So then after that, Prabhupada came to Malaysia, and he personally carried them in the plane. And then he brought them to Sydney, and then he installed them here. And there, in Great Transcendental Adventure, Kurma Prabhu says that after Prabhupada installed the deities and he was leaving Sydney, he says that, you know, Prabhupada prayed to the deities that I'm leaving you in the hands of Milechas.
My goodness.
So they don't know how to take care of you. You take care of them.
Wow.
That is the prayer that Srila Prabhupada had with Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Until
date, very beautiful.
Yeah, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath gives, really. So takes care of everybody. So, and I mean, I can see myself how he has taken care of me.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what is, that's why I said, like, Radha Gopinath has been doing a lot of things in the background.
So then what happened?
So then 2007, so we came in May, and my wife, that was the Janmashtami celebration in August. So my mother-in-law was also here. So my mother-in-law and my wife, they said, like, we want to go and do some service, because there was a Janmashtami celebration going on, and ISKCON Sydney had put up a stall. At that time, it was not so much popular, and not many people went.
Yeah.
So they had put up a stall to publicize themselves. So they were selling dosas, idli, vada,
nice,
whatnot, all those things, roti, and all those things. So they said, like, we want to go. I said, like, okay, fine, I'll drop you guys there, and then I'll pick you up later in the evening. So I dropped them, and I was walking back, and that moment I will still not forget, that Guru Maharaj was walking there with his big stick and
big personality.
And I mean, I don't know how it happened. Immediately I fell down, and then I paid my obeisances. I was not believing in ISKCON. I was not believing in anything else. But
when you
seeing him, immediately I just fell on the ground. He just kept on walking after that. I mean, I was one among so many people there, and I just paid my
obeisances.
But I still remember that day when I paid my obeisances to Guru Maharaj. But it didn't strike me later. I was just like, okay, fine, and then left it. 2010, this is after Guru Maharaj had the stroke. He had come to Sydney, and he was staying in Sydney for a long time because he had a infection in his leg. So at that time, again, I was not, they said, like, can we go to see Guru Maharaj? Again, my in-laws were here, so I said, like, okay, fine. My in-laws are also asking. I can't say no. So, okay, I took them. I took them there, and then had the opportunity to
meet
Guru Maharaj. I had a personal darshan. So then Guru Maharaj asked, how many rounds are you chanting? I said, I'm chanting one round. Oh, wow. You're chanting one round. So then he was asking, can you please chant two rounds? And I was like, okay. I said, yeah, two rounds. But again, that momentary association with a pure devotee, in 6 months, I was chanting 16 rounds. I don't know how it happened, but it's just his mercy.
Inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, yeah, looking at him and getting inspired, looking at him, how much he's doing and all those things. So, yeah, that happened. And again, before that, you know, Srila Prabhupada was in our home for Prabhupada Deity, the Murti. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So he was in our home for more than a year, almost a year. So the deity in the temple had some crack on that. So they replaced the Prabhupada Deity. And the old deity, one of the devotees was having in his home. So he was worshipping happily. He is a brahmachari in the temple now. He also got introduced at that time. And so he was very happily having Prabhupada. So then he went to India for brahmachari training in Pune. At that time, they were asking around like, so can somebody have Srila Prabhupada? So they approached my wife. And my wife came and asked, so can we have him? And I was like, so what to do? Why should we have, or, yeah, you know, what is expected? They said like, so once a week maybe, you know, you bathe him, you dress him, you iron the clothes and do all those things.
It's a small murti.
No, big one, like the one in the temple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a life size. I thought it was a small one.
No. The sofa, which is there in the deity room, that sofa, in that one, Srila Prabhupada was there. Nice. Yeah. So, this was the time when I was not even chanting.
Right.
And so Prabhupada came. And so I was basically bathing him, dressing him, and ironing the clothes, and, you know, doing all the things for him for 1 year without understanding anything. And as I said, like, I don't know why I was chosen or what qualification I had to do that kind of a service for Prabhupada. And I still don't have any explanation. And I think that's where the mercy was for me with Guru Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, that they saw me so fallen down that they lifted me. And
I think the magic happened when somehow or another you're taking prasada, you have association. He says, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha.
Yeah.
Sarva Siddhi Ho, by the moment of association with the devotee, everything, your life can change. Yeah. Unknowingly.
True.
Unbeknownst to us.
Yeah. You know,
it's not like we're planning something to become a devotee or something.
Yeah. So throughout this time, I never read any book.
So, but your wife was reading books?
Yeah, she was reading all the books and whatnot. Yeah. So one time when my in-laws came here, they left one Srimad Bhagavatam.
Hmm.
So they couldn't carry it because the weight was too much weight. Mm. So they said, like, one time when I was going to India, they said, like, can you bring it back? So on the flight, I was like, okay, boring, what to do? I had this book. Okay, let me read and see what is there.
Which canto was it?
It was the first canto.
First canto, okay, nice.
And you wouldn't believe me, I couldn't understand anything. Literally, it was all above my head. I read the three, first 10 pages. I couldn't understand what Srila Prabhupada was saying
what
there.
Means, what
yeah,
means.
What it means. And I was
something
like, okay,
deep,
it's not for me.
Something which is esoteric.
Yeah. So, but after Srila Prabhupada was here and I was serving him, somehow or other, I started attending some local classes.
Mm-hmm.
On Bhagavad Gita.
Who gave the class?
His Grace Vijay Gopikesh Prabhu.
Oh, nice.
He was conducting classes. So I went there with a mind to challenge.
Hmm.
Okay,
Okay. Let me ask some questions.
Yeah, let me ask, what do they know? Yeah, I know better than them, yeah. Kind of like, you know, so. So that was the time, I would say. So they were discussing about the 14th chapter, the three modes of material nature.
Mm.
And then later they were discussing about the qualities of a Brahmana, what is the quality of a Kshatriya, and all those things. And so that was what was described. Nobody had described Bhagavad Gita up until then like that for me. So when I saw that, and then, you know, they explained it is not by birth, and then I was shocked. It's not by birth, because my whole Smartha Brahmana mentality was...
I'm born into that
as a Brahmana. So that was completely taken off. And they had a very good argument in that aspect, that he asked, like, so would you go to a son of a doctor, and then would you say that you can operate on me without him being a doctor?
Right.
Would you do that?
Just because he is born for a doctor,
it doesn't necessarily mean that he would become a doctor. But there are tendencies that he can become a doctor.
Sure.
But it doesn't automatically qualify him as a doctor. So they gave me an example.
Good logical argument.
And so I was like, wow, I haven't heard this. So, going in a Smartha Brahmana family, I did not understand anything. I didn't get the answer. And then I was going more towards scientific this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not so much. And then I suddenly get some logical explanation that kind
which
of...
Which makes sense.
Which made sense completely. One good thing is that before that, I didn't read anything. So
you didn't go deep into Mayavadi philosophy.
Mayavadi philosophy.
I'm God, you're God, everything is God. Which is worse.
Yeah, exactly.
To understand.
It was better that I went into atheism
rather than
actually going deep into Mayavadi philosophy.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know what Shri Radha Gopinath had in his plan. He led me to atheism rather than this way. So somehow that made a lot of sense. And that's when I became a bit serious. So I could not challenge them. I couldn't challenge them. I mean, I didn't.
Yeah, you didn't know. But what are you gonna say?
Yeah, exactly. Them. Yeah,
perfect argument.
Yeah, perfect arguments.
You cannot say. No.
Yeah. And that's when I started reading Srila Prabhupada books.
Which book you read?
So the first book I read was Science of Self-Realization.
Beautiful
book.
Simple to understand.
Yeah, simple to understand.
Again, Prabhupada used a lot of logic.
A lot of example. Yeah. And many philosophy that he discussed about guru, what are the qualities of a guru, how one should select a guru, what is the quality of a disciple, what is, soul, what is this prakriti, everything was laid down very nicely and so logically as well. So I couldn't find any better answer. And then the second book that I read was Perfect Question, Perfect Answer.
That completely smashed all the argument.
Yeah. So after that, I couldn't ask any more questions. These two books completely
changed your vision.
Changed me. So that was the time. That was that 2010. That is the time, I met Guru Maharaj and I started going to the class and I started reading Srila Prabhupada books. And that's I became serious. And then that's how, like in 6 months, I started chanting 16 rounds.
But you took a lot of prashanam to put it around
yes.
at this point.
Yes, yes.
So we should thank your wife for planting a lot of seeds in your heart.
I think I should. I mean, actually, I should thank Guru Maharaj because my wife went to Guru Maharaj and then she asked, like, what should I do? Because my husband is not... Krishna conscious.
So she was already initiated?
No. She got initiated in...
Before you?
Yeah, before me. 2009, I think. She, 2009 she got initiated.
And you got initiated in?
2013.
Okay, a few years down the line.
Yeah. So at that time she came to me and then she said, like, I want to get initiated. I said, like, okay, fine. I left her in the temple. I took my son to the park. I said, like, you call me after everything is finished. So I didn't understand anything in 2009. I was like, as I said, like, you know, 2010 was the major change.
Shift in your life.
Yeah, complete change that happened. It was...
It's amazing how the life of the body, you know, at one point, you know, completely take a different turn. Mm. You know, it's like, you know, it's wonderful. But tell us about your son was born here in Australia.
No, he was born in US. He was born in 2005.
Okay.
So at that time, again, I was not into Krishna consciousness, okay. But my wife was following everything.
Nice.
So, you know, she was eating, she was honoring prasadam throughout the time and everything. And of course, my in-laws were also there. So everything was going fine.
But your wife is also from a Smartup family?
Yes.
Also?
Yes, okay. She is also
because
from Smartup.
I know, marriage means the same kind of, you know, lineage.
Yeah. So, but then my father-in-law, he is more attracted to Balaji.
Oh, nice.
So they lived in Tanjavur. So she was born in Tanjavur.
Oh.
So they would go to Divya Desam and, you know, everything around that and Srirangam.
Beautiful.
And so they were more towards
Vaishnavism. Or Sri Vaishnava.
No, not Sri Vaishnava, but then generally Vaishnavism. But they were also, at that time, I mean, she said before marriage, they used to also follow Sai Baba and, you know, everything. They used to go Thursdays for bhajans and whatnot. And so, but then again, they had a soft corner for, you know, Vishnu. So he would always go
there.
Something was there. So I think that, you know, they were able to easily adopt to that, because they were already attracted to Vishnu and Balaji, and so that worked well for them somehow.
And eventually they got initiated also.
Yeah, eventually they got initiated as well. Yes,
because of your wife.
Because of my brother-in-law.
Oh, okay.
So so my brother-in-law apparently, like, you know, he got good marks in his year 12th standard. So my father-in-law said, like, you know, whatever you want, he gave him the money. He said, like, you know, whatever you want, you spend. And apparently he went to Bangalore and with his friends.
Hmm.
And he saw some devotees doing book distribution. And somehow
which year it was?
This was 99. So he went there and then he bought the books. And he came back and then so he shared with all the things that he learned from the devotees to my wife, and she was happy, and she said, like, I also want one set of same books, and she made her father to buy the second set of books for herself. So, and then somehow they got introduced to Subhanga Prabhu and his wife.
Nice.
And and then they followed, Bhakti Vriksha there. And so they used to attend that. And Banu Maharaj was in Chennai at that time. Very influential. And that's how my brother-in-law knows Banu Maharaj very closely. And so that's how they actually, you know.
The time we were in Tinagar.
Yeah, Tinagar. Yes.
Right.
Yes. So at that time, so they got... introduced, and Banu Maharaj taught them so many things. So,
he was a kid, right?
He was doing in college, 18, 19.
He was young.
So he was quite young, and so he learned so many things from Banu Maharaj. And my wife was actually doing her dentistry at that time. So then, in 2001, she was finishing up her dentistry.
Nice.
So that's how. She came to Krishna consciousness.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Now tell us, Ananda Gopinath Prabhu, how is your Now you had started this congregational.
Yeah.
When did you start, and how did you start? What inspired you to start? First of all, let me say that you are well situated. You are in Sydney. You have a good job.
Yeah.
Your wife is working. Your son is doing fantastic in his school and university.
Yeah.
Or college.
He's going to university now.
He's going to university. Yeah. Very smart. Very intelligent. Very bright. And you are working as.
I'm working as a network and security architect,
which is a big job. Your wife work as?
She is working as a data analyst.
Data analyst. So these are a great position.
Yeah.
And what inspired you to take up this preaching movement? Because this is the desire of the Lord.
Yeah.
Now, Sri Chaitanya Manovistam, the Lord desired that we spread the Holy Name all over.
Yeah.
Town, every village. So what inspired you? You could have remained and you have money, you have a house, you have a car, you have a nice thing, and you say, okay, I'm happy here. Okay, I'm happy chanting. I'm happy taking prasadam. Okay, whatever. But what inspired you to take up the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya?
Yeah.
This is important for me to understand. For us to understand, to all our listeners.
Yeah. So, when I started attending the classes and those things, I have little bit of a singing ability, like Radha Gopinath Mercy, Guru Maharaj Mercy.
So, did you study as a musician or something? No.
In school, I won some singing competitions.
Okay,
and so by just listening, I learned some Carnatic music, and I didn't go to any class or anything.
Okay.
So I had that inclination.
Natural inclination. Natural music.
Inclination in music. So when I heard kirtan, so I would sing in the classes. I will do some kirtan. So at that time, Vijay Gopikesh Prabhu, he came and he said, "You're singing, you have a nice family. You're following Krishna consciousness, so why don't you take some classes?" Till then, I myself have not attended any bhakti riksha, and all I did was directly, attending Bhagavad Gita class and
a program
and then all these things. So I said, I have no idea how to do this. So he said, don't worry, we will help you. We will do some initial classes, show you how it is done and all those things. So like that,
you learn fast.
I learned. I would spend almost, this is again, I think it is the mercy, I would say, that I was being kind of forced upon. But then what that helped me to do was to read more of Srila Prabhupada books.
Because you will have to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
And people will ask questions.
I have to answer the questions. And so in order to be ready with those, I will listen to, I'll read those books. And then I listen to a lot of lectures. So my travel time to my office was primarily in the morning reading the book. And then while coming back, I'll spend about 1 hour every day, one way travel. So morning reading,
one hour,
and then while coming back, 1 hour listening to a lecture.
It's good.
So it was, it helped me more than me actually teaching somebody. Actually, it helped me to do that. And then I came to know that this congregational preaching is so dear to Guru Maharaj.
Yes. He's
the one who started it, and this Namahata and Bhakti Vriksha. So that made my resolution that, okay, somehow I need to, serve him, that I need to do something. And obviously in 2013, when I got initiated, Guru Maharaj asked, "Will you help me in spreading Srila Prabhupada's movement?" And so I said yes, in front of the fire, in front of Shri Radha Gopinath, Srila Prabhupada, in front of so many Vaishnavas when I got initiated. So that is still there. How can I serve my spiritual master. Obviously, you know, yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado. If my spiritual master is pleased, then I don't have to worry about anything.
Absolutely.
So my aim is, I know that it is very dear to Guru Maharaj, this preaching, and I simply want to, my desire is to simply want to satisfy my spiritual master.
Good.
That's the only thing.
So, but I think this program is not just preaching, it goes beyond that. It's like preaching is just, you know, you can give classes and people listen for entertainment, for information.
Yeah.
But you are actually training people, which is different from just preaching.
Yeah.
You know, I was a temple president in Chennai, so I preach every Sunday feast and like that. But we also train devotees. Mm. We take people from nowhere.
Yeah.
And we plant the seed in their heart, and we make sure that the plant of bhakti grows.
Yeah.
So we assist the devotee into the growth of Krishna consciousness, which is very, very important.
Yes.
A very delicate job, I would say.
Yes, yes.
So tell some experience of your, which you encounter within this family.
Yeah.
You know, and how it is difficult or easy. Tell us some story.
Yeah. So since 2012, I'm doing Bhakti Riksha slowly, one by one. So we started with one class. And then I got the acquaintance of His Grace Chaitanya Avatari Prabhu in New Rajapur Jagannath Dham in Bangalore. So he's a close family friend, and so got acquaintance with him. And he started guiding us as well in terms of Bhakti Vriksha.
I believe that you have a system how to make people. So maybe you can explain a little bit in nutshell how it is from zero to, you know, to bring them to love God.
Yeah.
But
So at that time it was only Bhakti Vriksha. So basically we would do the 6-week introductory class, and then after that we will go into Bhakti Vriksha. And so basically earlier we used to have the material given by Prem Prad Mini Mataji and his husband Venugopal Prabhu, from
they are the pioneer of this.
They were very,
where they started in India, they went to Singapore,
they were doing it in Middle East. That was very successful.
Where are they now? I don't see them much anymore.
I believe they are now in India.
Okay.
They are serving there.
Where?
I believe they are serving in Srirangam, if I may. I think that's where they are.
Okay.
I'm not too sure. So we found that the curriculum that or the number of weeks, and so it was divided into different philosophy. There was some discontinuity from one week to the other week. So there was no correlation, no logical flow. So
there was a gap.
There was a gap, and sometimes we also found, like, you know, we were discussing about demigods in like week 9 or week 10 of this thing, and that was, and right away I was hesitating, because when I came to Krishna consciousness, digesting the demigod worship and this thing was I couldn't. And then when somebody is new to ISKCON, and when we present that, I thought that, okay, no, this is not going to really. So I said, like, I'll not cover this topic. I'll cover it only later. So like that, there were some topics which were basically covered earlier, which we felt that. So
you readjust.
So we gave some feedback. And Chaitanya Tari Prabhu and my brother-in-law and few other devotees, they got together. And then they developed this new curriculum. So basically aligning with the Shiksha levels, Shraddhavan, Krishna Sadak, Krishna Sevak, and then Srila Prabhupada Ashraya, Guru Ashraya. So like that, you know, it aligned. So what philosophy,
elevation.
What philosophy that we should discuss for Shraddhavan level? So we're not discussing about demigod worship, nothing of that sort. So discussing only about, okay, who are you? Why are you here in the material world? Why am I suffering? So those kind of things. So initial logical flow was established. And that really helps us. So they made material for Bhakti Vriksha leaders so that it will help them what questions to ask, you know, icebreaker question, Namamrita, and then preaching is the essence. Everything connected. Whatever that you are discussing in the class, it will be connected.
Nice.
So, and then it will have a logical flow. So to give you an example, the very first class is a difference between human and animal. So at the end, we come to the conclusion that Atato Brahma Jignasa. You have to ask questions.
Yeah.
So then the next one is, where will I get the answer? So the next question is source of knowledge. And that's where we discuss about Pratyaksha Pramana, Anumana Pramana, Shabda Pramana.
From the senses, from the...
Yeah. So perception. So it has a logical flow from one to the next.
Which makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. So that made appealing for a lot of people. So Bhakti Vriksha is actually... I've been doing Bhakti Vriksha for more than 10 years now. I would say that no two classes are the same. It's all about discussions. How to bring the discussion between people. Those who are attending, how much you are able to interact with them and how much you are able to talk to them. So after, when I used to come from the office, so beyond a certain point, it would be that I'll call the devotees.
And you ask questions.
I'll talk to them after the class.
What would you say? Yes.
How are you? Try to find out more about them. What is their interest? How are they finding the classes? How is their family?
Personal,
yeah.
Which is very important.
Interaction, yes.
Very important.
Yes, that's what I learned in Bhakti Vriksha. That you have to invest so much of time in them that they will be able to value the classes. We can give the classes for 2 hours or something, but it's just going to go into 1 year and they will probably retain only 10%.
Yeah. But let me ask you one question. How many people attend this type of meeting? Because you have a number lock.
Yeah.
Which it cannot be 100, 200.
Yeah.
I don't know how many. What is the smallest group or the largest maximum you want to have in one class?
So generally we start around 20.
Okay.
Maximum 20.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the maximum we would go.
Okay. 15, I mean, 20 we know, like that.
Yeah, we know that after some time there is going to be a drop.
Yes, yeah.
Of course. Some people again, here,
take it.
They can't digest it. Yes. They can't. They are not ready. Their situation change, move to Melbourne or something like that, or they go back to India. They are on a temporary visa here.
So many factors.
So numbers keep on changing. We start with 20. The retention rate is somewhere around 6 and 7. That is what they will remain at the end of it. Now, this is 72 weeks.
Good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. 72 weeks of this thing.
Training.
The whole Bhakti Vriksha.
So it will take more than 1 year.
Yeah, more than 1 year. But then we purposefully drag it as well. So we go for more, almost to 2.5 to 3 years. Because
you keep in touch with them.
Yeah, we keep in touch with them.
Lost.
Exactly. So December, January, no class happens because everybody is on holidays.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then Janmashtami celebration, Gaura Purnima celebration. So
Radha Yatra, this, that.
And then Damodar month. So many things keep on coming. So essentially that 72 weeks keeps going till 3 years. So, but this is the time where we interact with them. We establish that family bond with them. And so that's how we kept growing. And today, in the groups that we are doing, there are 40 devotees who have already got initiation.
Wonderful. Plus you have other people who are more than 100 people who are following the same.
So system. Basically, after this, what has happened is how long we realized that how long are we, you know, because we are the bottleneck and our time is the bottleneck.
You cannot possibly keep everybody.
So you
split the group.
We split, but then
we empower
also the
people to do
yeah, exactly.
How many people you have now?
So right now we have about 10 devotees
who we have
trained them. So basically who got initiated and who wanted to do the services. So they come to our classes, they sit within our class, observe how much it is. So the whole training actually goes for 2 years. So they have to follow us for 2 years, all the classes that they are actually attending. So because they need to know, because I went through, I was put into the position where
I didn't know anything.
So I don't want them to be in the same situation.
Of
so
course.
That way they
you
can actually learn. And then obviously, then I will give them some small topics like Tulsi.
Hmm.
So why are we worshipping Tulsi? So that one topic, why are we wearing a tilaka? What is the, so that is a class by itself.
Yes,
what is the importance of prayers? So that is a class, and that in that one we teach Narsimha Shloka.
For protection.
So all these things, so those kind of small classes, I will give them. And so I will be sitting there, but then I'll ask them to conduct the class so that I can give them feedback.
Right.
So like that, slowly, you know, we have trained them. Now they are doing classes. But what we also saw was that, again, Bhakti Riksha got evolved.
Yeah.
We found that not many people are able to even stick around beyond like 15 weeks or something. So in order to come to a place where we can retain them.
Yes.
Whoever is starting to do Bhakti Riksha, we want to retain them for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So before this one got introduced, there is a concept called manjari.
Mm.
So there are different types of manjaris, Gita manjari, or Kirtan manjari, or Yoga manjari. So different manjaris are there. So anybody who is interested in doing yoga, so, you know, you play, go to yoga, you teach them a little bit of yoga, but then keep playing Mahamantra in the background.
Yes.
And then teach them some this thing. So that is one. Kirtan Manjari. So basically,
yes,
we
yes,
just
yes.
invite them for Kirtan. And then people are interested only in that. They are not interested in philosophy. Some people are interested in shlokas. So then invite them for Gita Manjari. But over a period in time, we found that, the development of the interpersonal relationship doesn't happen more so in the Yoga Manjari or in the this thing. So we started also some different classes like mind management, stress management, time management.
That's beautiful.
So kind of in a corporate style.
Right.
So we will have, groups there. We will divide them into groups. We will make them
exercise.
Yeah, do some exercises, come up with that. We will do a drama to demonstrate how stressful the family is. So like that. So kind of in a corporate style. So we conduct now and then like that. So then people got interested. So then we say, okay, now come for introductory classes of Bhagavad Gita. So for 18 weeks, we do only like one week. This happened actually even before COVID. Like this one actually evolved during COVID. Like, you know, so many of them took up to, but we were doing it even before that.
Nice.
So we were teaching the overview of each and every chapter. So once during that time, we figured that, okay, these are the people who are likely to stay. And then only those people go into Bhakti Vriksha. So
beautiful.
So then that system. So that's how now we are running the whole program, and so we are conducting quite a few. So every 6 months we will start a new manjari program in many suburbs. Earlier we were doing in only one suburb, but right now we are actually doing it in 6 suburbs. So different suburbs. So slowly we are expanding. And that's how we are able to.
So eventually, you had to conquer the whole Sydney. It will take time.
Hope so. Yes. Radha Gopinath Mercy, we should be able to do that.
Wonderful. Nice talking to you. And it's a very great pleasure. I learned a lot of things. And is there any parting message you would like to give to the people of our audience today? Any message to them through our Radio Mayapur, people listening to this? So we want you to give a message to them.
So it's been a pleasure participating in Radio Mayapur. You're doing a wonderful service to the devotees.
We are trying.
it's an amazing one to listen to different people from different places. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here in Radio Mayapur.
It's my pleasure.
That's the first thing, and I will ensure that, you know, I will take this Radio Mayapur to different groups.
Sure.
And we will ask them to listen to the kirtans and the podcasts and everything. So that is one thing which, you know, it's very inspiring to see that. So listen to all the Radio Mayapur podcasts. That would be my one of the messages.
Okay.
Here. And the second message is a humble request. Please pray for us so that we can preach and we can satisfy Guru and Gauranga, and we can please them sincerely and eternally.
Thank you so much. This has been a very beautiful podcast. Anandamayi Gopinath, I can talk to you for many, many hours.
Yes, certainly.
But it's been a great pleasure, and I'm sure that the Lord will bless you unlimitedly for the service you're doing, because Srila Prabhupada desires that we do this. This is a mission of our life. And that's why, you know, many devotees travel all over the world, trying to inspire everybody. And you are here with your family. You're doing your job. You're doing everything fantastic. Plus, you are doing the preaching. So you are a great personality. Thank you so much.
It's all my pleasure. Thank you so much for you, for giving your association every year by coming here and allowing us to serve you. Thank you so much.
Just sitting and taking rest and trying to be with all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki
jai.
Gaur Premananda.
Hari Hari Bol.
You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.